C-minus 92. Drive-in, Birchwood, Colorado. Henry McCarthy passed under a giant arched drive-in sign as he neared the entrance of New Care Grillin' Bar and Grill. The old drive-in lot, which had been officially rechristened Birchwood Plaza following its ascent to global renown as a popular location for news reports and grand speeches in the aftermath of Dan McCarthy's alien exposé, had since been renamed Birchwood Drive-In, with minimal fanfare. Locals had always known it simply as The Drive-In, while out-of-towners who came to visit the famous site knew it as The Birchwood Drive-In. And Phil Norris, a McCarthy family friend who purchased the empty lot for next to nothing many years earlier, ultimately accepted Emma's advice that it was time to stop fighting the tide and embrace a full rebrand. Given the evening's events, Henry had a feeling that Phil would be glad he hadn't also changed the name of New Care Grillin', a play on the common designation of the aliens' still-unlocated home planet as New Kerguelen. While Phil had wisely kept the giant screen and makeshift scaffold stage in place from the previous year, keen to retain the iconic backdrop to draw as many photo-hunting tourists as possible, several popular outlets had moved into the storefronts of the U-shaped lot. These included flagship branches of Man-Size Clothing and Beanstalk's Coffee, both of which sought to capitalize on the expensive commercials they had shot featuring Dan the previous year. The coffee shop was brimming with customers as Henry headed for the grill, and a young couple were happily posing for pictures against the world-famous backdrop. Birchwood was thriving like few could remember. Town pride was high, too. Locals no longer said they lived just south of Colorado Springs, and many who lived in between now gave their location as a few miles from Birchwood rather than a few miles from the city. Everyone in Birchwood had benefited from the tourist income, but few, if any, had done as well as Phil Norris. The rejuvenation of his long-dormant drive-in lot had enabled him to get out of the pawn shop game, watching on indifferently as his old shop's new owner turned it into an alien-themed tortoise trap which sold everything from tiny meteorite fragments to expensive life-size replicas of the messenger's engraved plaques. These kinds of tortoise stores were common in and around Birchwood, with another large concentration near Richard Walker's old IDA building in Colorado Springs. Phil caught sight of Henry's arrival and walked right over to greet him, grinning like a mouse in a cheese factory.
"Can you smell the money, Henry boy? Business is about to explode like a meteor."
Henry laughed as he made his way to the bar. Phil's entrepreneurial spirit was hard to beat, but he certainly wasn't the greedy or selfish man many might have assumed after a short meeting. He'd always been generous to the family and, by all accounts, had been very accommodating during Dan's undesired spell in the public spotlight, when Henry was hospitalized and unable to help. Phil had done well out of Dan's spotlight, too, of course, and Henry could once again see dollar signs spinning in his old friend's eyes. An even older friend, Walter Byrd, then turned to greet Henry from his seat at the bar.
"How's Dan?"
was the first thing the softly spoken man asked. Henry knew that his longtime neighbor had been even more helpful than Phil during the roughest months of the previous year, going beyond the call of duty by inviting Dan into his home and sticking by his side on live TV when a televised hypnosis went wrong.
"He's doing okay," Henry said. "Got a hell of a fright when he saw the news, but Emma and Clark are there."
Walter, a former sheriff's deputy known as Byrd to his close peers and Mr. Byrd to everyone else, looked concerned.
"What kind of fright? Does he think the meteor might have something to do with, you know?"
"Aliens?" Henry scoffed. "Nah, it'll be strange for him to see Kerguelen and Kendrick back in the news. But I don't think he was bothered by the anchors talking about hostility and Walker and all that crap. It was just a shock to see Kerguelen."
"It's better not to watch the news," Mr. Byrd said after a long and slow sip of his beer.
"Negativity for breakfast, fear for lunch and dinner."
"Speaking of dinner," Henry said, pointing over his shoulder towards the dining section of New Care Grillin'.
Mr. Byrd patted his stomach.
"I ate at home. We don't all have one of those free meal cards, you know. McCarthy's only."
Henry laughed. "I'll be quick.
You sticking around for the whole game?
Looks like it's over already, Mr. Bird said as he glanced up at the lopsided scoreline. But yeah, I'll be here.
Henry then took his spot at the dining area's McCarthy table, where regular customers could sit for an exorbitant fee during certain times of the day. The genuine manila folder Dan had found on the street outside the IDA building adorned the wall in a high-security frame. It was empty, with Hans Kloster's handwritten letter and all of the other contents stored even more securely in Phil's impenetrable vault. But the word Kerguelen on the front of the folder was enough to draw visitors from near and far. Phil would never forget Dan's kindness in donating the folder to the grill, and even after this many months, it still seemed like the public would never tire of looking at it. In the bustling dining area, one TV showed the game while the other, muted, was tuned to Blitz News. A short feature was coming to a close on the topic of a widely disliked group of self-styled extremists known as anti-dotalists, an offshoot of an already radical anti-natalist pressure group whose manifesto described humanity as a scourge on its unfortunate home planet. The anti-dotalists, who presented themselves as non-violent and drew their name from their belief that humanity was a virus to which deliberate self-destruction was the only antidote, were known for direct action, including intimidation campaigns against life extension researchers and industrial-scale agricultural sabotage intended to bring about localized famines. Billy Kendrick was one of many outspoken critics of the group, repeatedly arguing that they hid behind the term environmentalist and risked tarnishing it beyond repair. "These people are not environmentalists," he had said a few months earlier in an interview Blitz News had now decided to rerun in reaction to the fact that prominent online antidotalists were currently celebrating the Kerguelen bolide as a harbinger of a potentially imminent and long overdue cataclysm. "Egotistic, nihilistic, solipsistic, yes," Billy said, "but not environmentalist. Apologies in advance for the flippancy and potential insensitivity of my next comment, but these people belong in the environs of a mental hospital, and that's the end of my thoughts on the matter." After Billy's face left the screen at the end of this brief feature, it was replaced by the trademark scowl of Joe Crabb, a radio shock jock turned media commentator who had been vocal in his opposition to William Godfrey's GSC for longer than anyone else. The subtitles below Crabb's face relayed his usual talking points. "GSC power creep, American sovereignty, the road to tyranny." And the blood vessels in his neck looked fit to burst through the skin. When prodded on the subject of Richard Walker, Crabb then reverted to his usual role as an IDA apologist. Although almost everyone else in Birchwood detested Walker with a burning passion, Henry McCarthy didn't see the world in black and white. He had supportively followed Walker's political career for decades, admiring his storied military background and his refusal to bend whichever way the wind was blowing. Henry and the rest of the world now believed that Walker was responsible for a cover-up. The far-fetched idea of a Machiavellian hoax didn't even enter anyone's mind, but Walker's motive of protecting American interests above all else was one close to Henry's heart, and one which somewhat tempered his anger over the deceit. Mr. Bird, on the other hand, was firmer than anyone in his disdain for Walker, to the extent that his normally placid demeanor tended to go out of the window whenever Henry expressed anything less than full-on hatred for the man responsible for piling so much misery on Dan. Mr. Bird insisted that Henry would despise Walker more than anyone if he'd been there in person to see what Dan had gone through a year earlier, when Walker brazenly took to the airwaves to call him an opportunistic liar and accuse him of being a Chinese agent spreading anti-American propaganda. As Henry read Crabb's next comments, Phil arrived at the McCarthy table with a giant smile still etched on his face. "You know what, Henry? Tonight your meal card is even valid on the lobster. What do you say?" "Did you bang your head on something back there?" Henry asked. Phil roared with laughter and dived into a brief and nostalgic conversation about the glory days when his lot had been the backdrop for countless daily news reports beamed into hundreds of millions of homes. "And last time out," he said, "the lot's storefronts were pretty much all empty. Think of the business we'd do now if something else happens and this Kerguelen story picks up speed.
Just don't expect the boys to get involved in any more of that media crap, Henry said. And not because I'm back in the picture, just because they've had more than enough of that for one lifetime. You would do well, for sure, but don't expect them to be here talking to anyone. Not Emma neither. She's got a good thing going with her consultancy.
I don't know about that, Phil said, still smiling. Emma Ford, now there's someone who reminds me of myself, Henry boy. You know what I mean? I don't think that girl ever met a revenue stream she didn't like.
Henry shook his head.
The last thing any of them want is to get caught up in any more publicity. Trust me. Dan especially. He's probably over this whole meteor thing already. But either way, he's not going to do or say anything that would put him back in the public eye.
If you say so, Phil said, backing away.
Anyway, one lobster coming up.
Get one for Bird as well, Henry requested.
Meal cards are only valid for the name holder, Phil winked. Henry shrugged.
In that case, how about getting two for me? And if Bird happens to come over...
Just this once, Phil grinned, sighing in mock defeat. After all, your boys did build this place.